Automotive tips and trends, the return of the car gurus. In the automotive world, two new vehicles are all the buzz both at the car shows and in the marketplace, and both are electric. Tesla's new angular stainless steel Cybertruck garnered 300,000 orders in just a couple days. And the first edition of Ford's new reimagined Mustang Mach-E, an electric sport utility, has sold out. Pre-orders began November 17th. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on Main Calling, we will talk about whether these two models are a sign of things to come, roads full of electric performance vehicles, or collector's items for wealthy automotive enthusiasts. We'll also answer your more mundane car, truck, and SUV questions about keeping safe this winter or shopping for a good deal on a new car. Main Calling with the automotive experts next. But first, this news update. From the Maine Public Radio studios, I'm Jennifer Rooks, and this is Maine Calling. Tesla and Ford unveil new hybrid vehicles, all-electric vehicles. Nissan issues a massive recall, and winter is on the way. These are just some of the automotive stories in the news that we will talk about today with Jamie Page Deaton, automotive editor for U.S. News and World Report, and John Paul, master mechanic, senior manager for public affairs and traffic safety with AAA Northeast, the car doctor. As always, we want to hear from you. Are you in the market for a new car? Do you have questions about whether or not to use snow tires? Anything like that? You can send an email to talk@mainpublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or give us a call 1-800-399-3566. Jamie, I hear you're in the market for a new Corvette.
Yeah, because the 2020 Corvette is all new with a new mid-engine design. GM is putting some amazing discounts on the 2019 model, so their opening offer is nearly $12,000 under MSRP.
Okay.
And what people forget when there's a new Corvette on the market is how great the old one is.
So we're going to talk more about potential deals this time of year, but first I want to talk about two of the cars, or I should say vehicles, that are in the news, because neither one is a car in the traditional sense. John Paul, two, not only creating buzz in the at the shows and things like that, this Cybertruck from Tesla, but also Ford reimagining the Mustang. Both of them have all these pre-orders. People are really excited about them. Tell us about these vehicles and why is this so exciting?
Well, the Cybertruck, a couple things it really pointed out was, I guess people don't really think a truck has to look like a conventional truck, which is sort of a box with a box on top of it. The Cybertruck really, I think, looks at the designer's imaginations at Tesla. It also apparently proved Elon Musk can't drive very well because I think he hit something with it already. But it's the idea of this electric truck with a large capacity. A little bit different looking than most.
Looks like something from a sci-fi movie.
It really does have a little bit of that sort of Mad Max sort of look to it. Very angular. I'd love to see it in person because all the pictures, when it shows in reference to a different size, it is a pretty formidable looking truck. It's a pretty big thing. And all these people that are just kind of jumping on to go buy it is just amazing because nobody really knows what it is. And also part of the problem is there are some things which are not going to meet some of the federal requirements. Like it doesn't have side view mirrors. It doesn't have a traditional rear view mirror. It uses a lot of cameras instead. Well, there's a federal motor vehicle safety standard that says you need to have rear view mirrors. And so there's going to be some workarounds with that. Right now, the one that they see that seems to be running around is on a manufacturing plate, so it doesn't have to really meet any specific rules. But the idea of a pickup truck with a good range, with incredible performance, pretty interesting idea.
All electric.
All electric. And and I had a conversation with electric vehicles with someone just the other day, and it was sort of interesting because they said, I'm not ready for that. I just don't want to plug my car in every night. And I said, how many things do you plug in now? And he kind of looked at me and said, well, my tablet, my laptop, my phone, and my toothbrush. And I'm like, so you got one more thing. And if you can make it easy, depending on where you live, if you can make it easy to do, especially if you have the luxury of having a garage where you just pull into the garage at night and pop open the charging door and plug in the charger, pretty easy to get used to doing that, not going to a gas station. So it certainly has its place. And the idea of a truck with performance is nothing new. There's been hot rod trucks around before. But the idea of a truck that can work really hard,
That's all electric,
is pretty interesting. Although, you know, I drove, a couple hundred miles already today, and I saw an awful lot of trucks with nothing in them and one person behind the wheel. So you have this incredible power and performance. People maybe aren't going to really use it. So I it's kind of interesting. And the price point is really what's amazing. I mean, they're talking $40,000.
I want to talk to you, Jamie, about Ford and its Mach-E. It's a Mustang. From what I understand, the only thing that's similar between the new Mustang and the old Mustang is something about the length and the slope of the hood.
Yeah, and I mean, honestly, too, the name is about the most easily recognizable Mustang thing about the Mustang Mach-E. But I saw this recently at the LA Auto Show, and this is, you know, you can debate, and I think if you're an enthusiast and a big, you know, Mustang fan, they are debating whether or not the Mach-E is, you know, truly a Mustang. But just, you know, if you lay that debate aside, the Mach-E really makes a strong case as just a practical electric car that should really appeal to a lot of people. You know, it's got a comfortable back seat, so you could use it, you know, to carry more than two people. It's a lot bigger than a lot of the other all-electric cars that we see, and it has some great performance numbers. And it's reasonably affordable with a decent range as well. So this is one of those where, you know, the automaker is trying to, you know, Ford's taking the Mustang name and they've put it on this all-electric car. They're trying to bring that, you know, Mustang brand up into, you know, the cutting edge of car technology. And it could potentially, I think, win over a lot of new people to the brand, people who might not consider, you know, a Mustang sports car because either they need the extra space or they're not big fans of the way the current Mustang, which honestly is a great sports car, it's a great pony car, it's very fast, it's exciting to drive, but it's also very kind of old school. I mean, it's got that retro styling. The suspension is just a little bit more lively than a lot of people would expect in a modern car. And the Mach-E kind of glosses over those aspects, puts in this all-electric monster powertrain in there. So it could certainly win over a lot of new people to the Mustang brand and over into Ford showrooms.
Well, and you know, this is what's interesting to me. I learned a lot reading about these cars, and it seems to me, Jamie, and you tell me if this is the case, that this seems like a shift, that electric cars before this year or electric vehicles were mainly sort of like, buy this electric car because it's good for the environment. And we're having a little bit of a shift of saying, you know, some manufacturers saying buy an electric car because this is the performance car. This is the thing that's cool and new and a different kind of calculation. Am I right?
Yeah, for sure. And I mean, you kind of are seeing a little bit of a shift. You know, electric cars, like you said, kind of used to be either you bought one because you were virtue signaling, like, look at me, I'm saving the planet, or you were an early adopter, which I would put a lot of, you know, early Tesla buyers in there. Hey, I'm willing to take a risk, and I can take a risk on this new technology. Or you had the very kind of economical EVs, like the Nissan Leaf, which was, I'm doing the right thing, and signaling that way. Now, you can have an electric car with very little compromise, either in terms of budget, because you can get a great EV with the Hyundai Kona that has very good performance, or if you're willing to spend more, you're seeing all of these electric cars being introduced either as performance models, like the Ford Mustang Mach-E, or from luxury brands, like the Porsche Taycan, or the Jaguar I-Pace, or, you know, Cadillac recently announced that, you know, within the next 10 years, their entire lineup will be electric. And so it's really about, making a luxury play, because the people who are most likely to be early adopters of this technology and who can adopt this technology are going to be the luxury buyers.
Well, shifting gears here, pun intended. John, I wanted to ask you about the Nissan recall, nearly 400,000 vehicles over a potential fire hazard. Tell us about that.
Well, whenever there's a fire hazard, it's never a good thing. And, I don't know all the specifics about the Nissan recall, and it is, but one of the things, and people get really panicked about recalls, so they really have to look at, what are we going to do? It's not a terrible thing. It means that your car's, something's wrong with it. It's going to get fixed. And when it has a catastrophic event, like a potential fire, you want to try to get it fixed right away. Now, I don't know if Nissan's gone as far as other vehicle manufacturers have in the past and said, don't park the car indoors, which a lot of manufacturers do. And because they're concerned about that. But for people who own those cars, I would certainly get them to the dealer as soon as they can and get the problem taken care of, because it is going to turn, something you want to get fixed. And once it's fixed, it's fixed. My personal car has had, I think, two recalls in the last year. My wife's car has had three recalls in the last 4 years. They get fixed. Everything's fine. You move on. So
So the Nissan, I'm reading it from an article that I found at NPR.org. Owners advised to park affected vehicles outside and away from structures if the anti-lock brake system warning light comes on for more than 10 seconds.
Right. So it's signaling there's an issue with the electrical system. That electrical system can turn into, the wiring can short out enough. It can get hot. It can cause a fire. I think if I remember reading this just yesterday, I don't think there was any cases where there was actual fires.
It's a potential fire hazard.
So it's not like there's Nissans popping up in flames all over the place. But what's nice is that they're identifying this problem and they're going to remedy it. And again, if you own one of these affected cars, and if you don't know if you do, go to the National Highway Traffic Safety website, put in your vehicle identification number, that 17-digit number that that comes with your registration or is on the car, put it in, let you know if your car's been recalled at any point, and where you can put in the individual vehicle identification number, let you know if it's been fixed.
We have our automotive gurus on the show today. If you have a question for them, our phone number 1-800-399-3566. You can send an email, talk@mainpublic.org, tweet @MainCalling, or post to our Facebook page. Jamie, let's circle back to where we started. I heard that you are eyeing the Corvette, the 2019 Corvette, because there's such a good deal on. Is this the right time of the year if you're looking for a deal on a 2019 car?
I mean, it really depends on the kind of car you're looking for. If you're looking for something like a compact SUV, which are incredibly popular right now, no, you're not going to get a deal, because it's just the laws of supply and demand. If there's a lot of people who want that car, your odds of getting a deal are that much lower. But if you're looking for something that's going to be redesigned or have a new model released in 2020, you are going to be able to get some good deals. And that's like the Corvette that I mentioned. I mean, GM is throwing $12,000 at buyers as their opening offer. The Escalade, which a new one is debuting in February. The 2019 Escalade right now has $8,000 cash back. The 2020, I mean, even before we hit 2020, the 2020 Escalade has $4,000 cash back available on it. And so automakers are even offering a lot of 0% financing deals. You know, talking about electric cars, the Jaguar I-Pace, the 2019 model, and this is an electric kind of crossover SUV, Jaguar's offering 0% financing for up to 60 months on it. And that is incredible. You almost never see financing offers like that from Jaguar, because quite simply, they don't have to. And then especially too, if you're looking at a car instead of an SUV, a great one is the Kia Stinger. It's one of the best driver's cars out there. It's super affordable, super upscale interior, and Kia is offering 0% financing for up to 66 months on it, plus $2,000 cash back, or you can go up to $5,000 cash back if you bring your own financing. So this time of year, as automakers and dealers, or they're trying to close the year out strong, it puts buyers in a great position, especially the longer in the month that you wait to go to the dealer, as they're kind of staring down their month-long deals and their year-end goals. It's a good opportunity for buyers to really get, you know, a little bit of a better deal, provided that you're not, that your expectations are realistic and you're not looking for a deal on a super popular model, because that's just not likely to happen.
Yeah, Jamie, absolutely agree with that. And I did the best I ever did shopping for a car was on New Year's Eve. Literally, I went out to a car dealership. I went shopping a little bit, and they had an incentive offer, which was pretty good. But also, if they hit their next tier level of a quota, they would get more money back on all the cars they had previously sold. So my car was going to put them over the edge. So anything from my car on forward, they would actually make more money on all the cars they had sold previously up until then for the quarter. So the person said, look, you know, we pay $20,000 for the car. We'll sell it to you for $18,000. We'll show you the paperwork, what we paid for the car, because if you buy this car today, we actually make money. And he showed me how they would actually make the money on it. So Jamie's right. Wait as far as you can, but be serious. Walk into the dealership with your checkbook in your pocket, ready to buy, and don't waste their time. If you think you're just going out to shop just for shopping, don't bother. But if you're going out to buy, right near the end of the year is a great time to do it.
We're going to take a quick break, John. When we come back from the break, I'm going to ask you some winter driving tips or good reminders for us as far as taking care of our car, but also driving safely. And we'll also find out what you all have been driving recently. We'll also go to listener calls and questions. So stay with us. This is Maine Calling. We'll be right back.
Listener support brings us Maine Calling with help from Bull Moose, celebrating the tactile experience of reading and proponents of dog ears and bookmarks. Locations across Maine and at bullmoose.com. Breakwater, curiosity for life, offering exceptional day school and after school options for toddlers through 8th grade. Breakwaterlearning.org. And BCM Environmental and Land Law, announcing a merger with Thomas R. Hanna and Associates. More on their Vermont, New Hampshire, and Maine practice at nhlandlaw.com.
On the next Fresh Air, actress Charlize Theron, who stars as former Fox News anchor Megyn Kelly in the new film Bombshell. She tells us about transforming herself physically for the role, and she'll talk about growing up on a farm in South Africa during apartheid and being raised by a strong mother. Join us.
Join us for Fresh Air this evening at 7 o'clock here on Maine Public Radio. Maine Public is pleased to be a media sponsor of a holiday tradition for all ages. The Bangor Symphony Orchestra's The Nutcracker with the Robinson Ballet will be presented this coming weekend, Saturday and Sunday, at the Collins Center for the Arts in Orono. Maine Public members are eligible for 15% off tickets to the performances. To learn more about the performances and how to take advantage of the Maine Public member discount, please visit mainepublic.org and click on Events.
Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on the program, answers to your car buying, car fixing, or car safety questions. My guest, John Paul, who is a master mechanic and spokesperson for AAA. Jamie Page Deaton, automotive editor for U.S. News. We invite you to join the conversation. Call 1-800-399-3566. Send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to our Facebook page. John, you'll be proud of me. I'm getting my snow tires on tomorrow a little late, as we've already had a snowstorm, but still, I know how you feel about snow tires.
Yeah, winter tires are so important. And it's also a good excuse because, you know, roads haven't been great. There's been a lot of potholes. Your regular tires could have suffered some damage. The number one and two reasons we come out to rescue people, flat tires and dead batteries. So if you can put another set of tires on your car that's in good condition, and especially good winter tires, and the difference between winter tires and year-round tires, winter tires, besides having a more aggressive tread where they can dig into the snow and get you moving, which also helps stopping, which is more important to me. Also, the rubber is more pliable in cold weather. So even if there's not snow on the road, when the temperature drops down to, you know, 10 degrees, your regular tires tend to get hotter and tend to lose traction, where winter tires, dedicated winter tires, actually the rubber stays softer and it stays stickier, so you're actually able to stop and steer better. So better traction, better handling, better stopping, no better reason to put winter tires on than all those reasons. And it's also important with people that have four-wheel drive and all-wheel drive vehicles. They're like, well, I have four-wheel drive. What do I need winter? Winter tires can make such a big difference, especially if you have to be out before the snowplows are out.
And how do you feel about all-weather tires?
All-season tires, all-weather tires, will give you about 70% of the traction of a winter tire in maybe 4 or 5 inches of snow. So if you get a foot of snow and you want the best traction, winter tires are there. And, you know, one thing about tires are the only part of your car that touches the ground. So they're very important. You want to make sure they're in good shape. And the idea of, you know, the old rule of, you know, take a penny, stick it in the tread. If it doesn't come up to Lincoln's head, you know, you replace the tires. No, you replace tires way before that. It's important to have good tires on the car before winter time sets in, so you have good traction and good steering and good handling. And like I said, more importantly, good stopping.
Okay, we'll start with Carl, who's calling from New Gloucester. Hi, Carl. Go ahead. You're on Main Calling.
Hello?
Yes, go ahead.
I had a couple of statements, so thanks for being on. My wife and I bought a used Nissan Leaf this past summer, and we love it. There's so much less maintenance. The two things that I have on it is if Governor Mills wants to increase the amount of electric car ownership, they should get less greed. MSRP on this vehicle.
Ooh, Carl, I'm going to ask you to call back on a better cell phone line. You're cutting in and out, but let's see. We'll move on to Dan, who's calling from Old Orchard. Hi, Dan. Go ahead.
Hi. I was calling. I just bought some tires. They're called All Weather Ready from Goodyear, and a couple of manufacturers make them, and they've been in Europe for a number of years, and they actually are supposed to be winter and summer tires, and when they wear, they're supposed to wear evenly and maintain its grip throughout winter and summer. Just wondering if they knew anything about them.
Yeah, Dan, great follow-up on what John and I were just talking about.
Yeah,
go ahead.
I believe they're very similar to the Blizzak tires. So it's a softer rubber compound. They work well. And once they start to get to the point where they're maybe 50% or so worn, they sort of turn into more of a traditional tire. So, yeah, it is. And to designate them as true winter tires, you'll see this sort of mountain with the snowflake on the side of it. If they have that, they're really considered winter tires as opposed to an all-season tire, which, like I said, an all-season tire means a lot different to up here in Maine than it does, say, in Arizona. You know, so the characteristics are very different. So you want to, you know, those tires, yeah, you can use them year round. They're gonna work well in the wintertime, but I believe as they get about 50% or so worn, they get sort of turn into sort of a traditional all-season tire, very much like the Blizzak tires do.
Thanks, Dan, for your call. We have an email from Sandy. I have heard about an all-wheel drive Prius. Can you talk about this vehicle? Is this a new model year? Have any of you driven it? Seems like a good option for those of us in Maine who want a hybrid yet need all-wheel drive. Jamie, I'm going to throw Sandy's question to you.
Yeah, this is a new variant on the Prius that I believe will be hitting the market in 2020. And I mean, I've kind of joked that this is the Prius New England edition because you see a fair number of Priuses on the road in, you know, Maine, New Hampshire, Vermont, Massachusetts. But the main stumbling part for the Prius, especially if you live in an area like New England, is it doesn't have all-wheel drive. Now, I will say the Prius does a great job with snow tires on all four wheels, even if you just have a front-wheel drive variant. But I think having a Prius available with all-wheel drive, especially if, like John says, you're putting snow tires on it in the winter, makes a lot of sense, particularly if you're in an area where, you know, the plows aren't so great about clearing or it's fairly remote. So this is coming. So if you're a Prius fan and looking to buy, you might want to wait so you can get one with all-wheel drive.
All right, good question. We'll go to John calling from Gorham. Hi, John. Go ahead.
Hi. I was talking to your the lady who answered the phone, and she said that my question is something that even she's been wondering about. I know how much it costs me to buy fuel for my car. I know, you know, over a year's period of time, but I can't find anywhere where I can make a comparison of how much it would cost me to fuel, put electricity in an electric car. I mean, there doesn't seem to be anything I can find.
You know, John, there are calculators.
You can actually kind of do the math if you wanted to do the math, I suppose. But you can also go to the EPA website that lists the fuel economy ratings for gasoline cars, and it'll give you the electric vehicle equivalent number, so you have kind of an idea. But the other thing is, if you take the size of the battery pack and how much electricity usage there is, and you look at how much you pay for a kilowatt hour of electricity, you can actually kind of sit down and kind of do the math and figure it all out. The last time I sat down and did that, it gave me a headache because it was too much math for me. But you can actually do it. And you can actually on the fuel economy website, you can take a gasoline car and take an electric car, and you can do kind of a side-by-side comparison, and you can kind of look and see how it kind of shakes out at the end. It is going to vary, obviously, based on the kilowatt hours for charging. The other part of it is sometimes when I road test an electric car, where I work, we have a charging station, and the first 2 hours are free, and it's $2 an hour charging after that. So if I was smart enough, I would just charge for 2 hours and unplug it and plug it back in again a little bit later, and it wouldn't cost me anything. The last time I went to Boston in an electric car, I pulled up in front of the Boston City Hall, and there was all free electric charging. So it does throw it off a little bit based on where you charge and how much you pay to charge. That's going to throw the number off. But if you were looking at just basically charging at home and charging with 110-volt like wall outlet is a very impractical way to charge. So the best way is with the equivalent of the electricity that runs an electric dryer, for instance. And if you have a charging station, it's that much easier. But you can actually do the math and kind of figure out, you know, how much you pay per kilowatt hour and how big the battery pack is and how much it's going to cost to fill the battery pack.
And this is, and what you're talking about, the guide to help figure it out is on the EPA website.
Yeah, it's I think it's fueleconomy.gov.
Okay, and we'll see if we can find that information and put it on our webpage and our Facebook page. Anything you want to add to that, Jamie?
No, just that, I mean, it's been a while since I have done the math, but the last time I did, and I forget which cars I was comparing, it was costing me about 30 cents a mile to do a conventional gasoline power car and about 11 cents a mile to do an electric car, because I like to think about it on a per mile basis, not just a filler up kind of basis. And then the other thing to remember, too, is you can charge your electric car during off-peak hours, which will potentially cost you less per kilowatt hour than when you're charging during peak hours, depending on your power company. I have yet to see a gas station that says, hey, if you come in during off-peak hours, you can save a little bit. So that's another advantage, especially if you get an electric car where you can set the charging time to begin at a certain time. So you plug it in. It's kind of like a coffee maker. You plug it in, you set it to start at a certain time. If you set it to charge during off-peak hours, you can save a little bit of money there.
Thanks for your call, John. And Jamie, as we talk about this, you mentioned that Cadillac is going to go all electric within just a few years. We're talking about all these electric cars. Meantime, the vast majority of cars out there for sale now are not electric. Do you agree with industry analysts that say this is going to happen really quickly and really soon, even though it's not our reality right now? It's going to be our reality in a decade.
Well, you know, it's funny because I think it's going to happen both sooner and farther away than we think. So if you're buying a new car, yes, there's going to be a glut of electric cars on the marketplace. Like they're coming. There's a wave. And, you know, even as recently as 2 years ago, you really didn't have much to choose from. Now, no matter what your budget is, I mean, there's a new electric Mini that's coming to market next year. And once you factor in all of the incentives and the tax breaks, you know, this is a brand new Mini, which normally retails for around $30,000, and you could get it for about $17,000. So there's something for every budget as far as electric cars are concerned, and they're coming faster and faster. Now, if you're talking about, however, the entire U.S. fleet turning over into electric cars, that is going to take a very, very long time, because you have people who are holding on to their cars, you know, for 11 to 12 years on average. And even when they buy, you know, and they replace their car, most people aren't buying new cars. They're buying used cars. And the vast majority of used cars are still gasoline powered. So, yes, the new car market is going to shift. But if you look at the overall number of vehicles on the road, that shift is going to be much more slow than just what new car buyers will see.
I heard somebody say it the other day that they sort of predict the future is going to be gasoline cars in maybe, pick a year, 20 years, are going to be as rare as standard shift cars today. So, you know, you kind of walk through a parking lot and kind of look around and say, oh, there's a manual transmission, and I walked by another 100 cars that are all automatic transmissions. That's what we might see with gasoline cars maybe in 20 years or so, that the internal combustion engine will never go away, but it may just be as electric cars become that much more popular and battery technology gets better and battery recycling technology gets better and providing the electrical grid doesn't fall apart, which is the big concern, is that we may run out of electricity, which could certainly be a problem and cause issues with this, that electric cars are getting to the point where they could be a replacement. Years and years ago, I owned an electric car. It was awful. It was a horrible car. It was made in Acton, Massachusetts by a company called the U.S. Electric Car Company. It was a Renault LeCar, which was not a great car to start off with, and they converted it over to electric power, and it was awful. Today's electric cars, you drive them like every other car. They drive great. You plug them in, you charge them up, you're good to go.
And they have fewer parts.
And they have fewer parts, less things to wear out. Things are still going to wear out. Mechanics and technicians still are going to need to learn how to fix these cars when they break, because it's not going to just be a gasoline engine that breaks. It's going to be an electric motor and transmission units and bearings, and still things wear out.
An email from Swede. I recently took my car to the dealership for a 50,000-mile service. The advisor told me that a brake fluid flush was recommended. I dutifully nodded my head, despite having no issues with brake performance. When I returned home, I read my service booklet and found no such brake flush recommendation. Have I been scammed for $88? John?
Scammed is a hard word. Brake fluid, by nature of its chemical composition, tends to absorb moisture. Moisture causes rusting inside the brake system, and especially with the anti-lock brake systems doing so much extra work today with the traction control and anti-lock brakes and stability control system, it's all an important part of it. That moisture, again, can cause rust. It can cause some problems inside the car. Most of the time it happens when you have brakes replaced, so it, you know, whenever your brakes wear out 40, 50, 60,000 miles, you're probably going to get a brake fluid replacement anyway. Some manufacturers do actually specifically recommend at 30,000 miles you replace the brake fluid. Not that many. So did you get scammed? Maybe what really happened was you got fresh brake fluid in the car. That's going to help maintain the system. Did it need it? If you're going to get rid of the car in the next year or so, you probably threw $88 away. If you are going to try to keep the car for a long time, wasn't a bad move.
All right. An email from Allison. Would your guest like to recommend, here you go, Jamie, an extended cab pickup truck that can be used to pull a small camper across country? Gas mileage is a priority.
So I don't know the weight of the camper, but saying small, and I don't know how the emailer recommend, like how they defined extended cab, right? So those are the first two questions. But
let's say a back seat. I'm going to guess for Allison.
Well, no. But I'm just saying, like, there are major differences in the back seat space when you're moving from, you know, a mid-size pickup truck to a full-size pickup truck. So if you're looking at a mid-size pickup truck, there are a couple of really comfortable ones. The Honda Ridgeline has, you know, reasonable towing capability, could probably tow a small camper, and has a decent back seat and good fuel economy. However, if you move up to the Ram 1500, gas mileage isn't going to be as good, but that back seat is just palatial, and the rest of the interior is really nice as well. So those would be the two that I'd start with. If you're looking at, you know, the Ford Ranger, a lot of people, you know, are fans of it. I'm not. The back seat isn't all that comfortable. So if you're frequently having, even the biggest back seat they offer, if you're frequently having passengers back there, it's really just not a great choice. However, I would say if you're looking for one that's a little bit more fun, the Jeep Gladiator, which is the basically Jeep Wrangler pickup truck, will allow you to not only have a truck and it has a usable back seat and it can tow your camper, but you can also take the roof off. So you get a convertible. So it's like getting a free car thrown in there.
All right. Well, thanks, Allison, for that question. Carl is trying to call back from New Gloucester. Hi, Carl. Let's see if you sound better. Go ahead.
Yeah. Here I am. It's better.
Yes.
So my wife and I bought a used Nissan Leaf this past summer, and we love it. But a comment I would have to Governor Mills, if she wants to introduce more electric car buying, is that to back off on the sales tax, because you can buy an equivalent gasoline car for about half the price. So you save a lot on sales tax by going with an internal combustion engine. And then you have the excise tax based on the MSRP for the life of the vehicle, which it makes a big difference on the taxes. The other thing is I think our congressional delegation needs to look at taxing across state lines, like what's done for the diesel trucks, because all these electric cars from Massachusetts and New York State, they're going to go to their second homes and charge their vehicles and never pay a penny towards our road tax.
Okay. Yeah, thanks, Carl, for your call. We'll go to Lee, who's calling from Brewer. Hi, Lee. Go ahead.
Hey, how are you?
Great. Go ahead.
Yeah, so I was I wanted to address this whole thing with the Tesla pickup truck. I'm kind of bullish on electrical vehicles, and I went on the internet, took a look at it, and I have to say that my first response to the design was to break out in laughter. I've owned pickup trucks for most of my adult life, and there is no way in the world that a traditional pickup truck driver is going to drive something that looks like that.
Well, thanks for your call, Lee. It's so funny. I was at a dinner party and there was a little debate over the design, Jamie, and some people really loved it and some people did not. Is it the traditional pickup driver that Tesla's going for?
No, they're not going for that market. I mean, I think it'd be great if for Tesla. I'm sure they'd hope that a couple of traditional buyers, you know, when they see the capability of the truck, would move over. But I think this is a play for people who might not have considered a pickup truck before. And I would say, you know, the Tesla's not the only electric pickup truck maker out there. There's Rivian, which has a more traditional look to their electric pickup trucks, and that's a company that Amazon has invested something like $100 million into, and they're making electric trucks and electric SUVs. There's also Bollinger. If you really want a traditional pickup truck look, the Bollinger EV looks like, a 1960s Land Rover. They're really good looking trucks, very squared off and traditional looking. So, Tesla truck, it's sucking up a lot of air in the room, but it is definitely not the only one out there. I'd also add that there's been an electric Ford F-150 Mule spied, in testing all over the country. So, if you're a traditional truck buyer and you want an electric truck, the Tesla truck is by no means your only option that you're going to have. I will say, though, the one thing that I think is super smart about the Tesla truck is the tailgate folds down into a ramp, which I think I'm kind of shocked that other automakers haven't thought about that before, because, if you're loading equipment or, even if you're just taking mulch in and out of the bed of a truck, having a ramp would make that a lot easier. So that's one thing that I really like about it.
Lee, thanks for your call. We are going to take another quick break. When we come back, more of your comments and questions. And as promised, I'm going to ask John and Jamie what they've been driving recently that they really like. We'll be right back.
Listener support brings us Maine Calling with help from AARP Maine, working to lower prescription drug costs. Learn more at aarp.org/rx. The Lunder Foundation, founding partner of Maine Public Radio and Maine Public Classical. And Encore Renewable Energy, creating commercial-scale solar projects on unused land like brownfields and landfills. EncoreRenewableEnergy.com.
2020 is almost here, and Democrats are getting set for another debate over key issues like health care.
I do think it is appropriate to acknowledge that taxes will go up.
And who can beat President Trump?
And if you think a woman can't beat Donald Trump, Nancy Pelosi does it every single day.
I'm Michelle Martin. Join us for live special coverage of the PBS NewsHour Politico-Democratic Debate from NPR News.
That's coming up Thursday evening at 8 on Maine Public Radio and Maine Public Television.
Hello, I'm Jane Wales, host of World Affairs. Since the U.S. withdrew from the Iran nuclear deal, tensions between the U.S. and Iran have been escalating. Next on World Affairs, Colin Kahl, he's former national security advisor to Joe Biden, will join us to discuss what the dangers are.
That's coming up in just a few minutes at 2 o'clock, right here on Maine Public Radio.
Welcome back. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You're listening to Maine Calling. Today on the program, the latest news from the world of cars, trucks, and SUVs. My guest today, Jamie Page Deaton, who is automotive editor for U.S. News and World Report, and John Paul with AAA, the car doctor. Join our conversation at 1-800-399-3566. Before I go back to listener calls and questions, I want to ask you all what you've been driving. Because you're members of the automotive press, you get to do what a lot of people would be envious of, drive a lot of brand new cars. John, what have you been excited about recently?
Well, excited in a weird way. I drove the new Cadillac, the 2020 SUV, the XT6. And I really wanted to love this truck. And it's a luxury SUV. And it has three rows of seats. It can seat six or seven. It's built on the same platform as the Chevy Traverse and the GMC Arcadia. It uses a pretty traditional 3.6-liter V6 engine. It makes about 310 horsepower. Unfortunately, it was just okay. And, you know, it didn't do anything wrong necessarily. The interior was very nice. The styling was pretty good. The performance was okay. They used the same engine in the next size smaller. So I think having, you know, to me, because I guess I'm of a certain age that Cadillac means a certain thing. It's a certain style. It's a certain performance. It's something. And this Cadillac just wasn't quite there. You got in it and you went, this is a very nice car. It was, you know, nothing you could really say was wrong with it, but it didn't really make me go crazy about the car. And I really wanted it to. I really wanted to love it. And I just thought it was okay. So a little bit disappointed, I guess.
Jamie, what have you driven recently of note?
Of note would be the Kia Telluride and its cousin, the Hyundai Palisade. You know, contrasting with John's experience with the XT6, which I've also been in and think it's just, you know, okay. Here you have two midsize three-row SUVs coming from very affordable brands, and they're blowing the luxury SUVs out of the water. To my mind, there's no comparison between the Telluride, the Palisade, and the XT6. They are much more satisfying to drive. They have very good power, some really smart safety innovations. So on both the Palisade and the Telluride, when you put your turn signal on, a camera on the side that, you know, you're turning will show you a display of what's in your blind spot in the instrument cluster. And this was a huge help as I drove it through the city, and there's a lot of bicyclists, which don't always set off the blind spot warning system in cars because they're just not big enough. Having that camera there and being able to check my blind spot made it so easy to maneuver a larger vehicle through traffic. And the interiors on these are just really good looking. The tech all works together very seamlessly, and they're doing it for a lot less money than you'd pay for a Cadillac. I was also recently in the Lincoln Aviator, which I liked quite a bit. I especially like they have a plug-in hybrid model where you can get, you know, you plug it in overnight and you can get about 20-some miles of all-electric power, which I think for a lot of people makes a lot of sense because you could commute on all-electric power, and then if you have a longer road trip, you've got the gas engine and you're good to go. But overall, just in terms of value, because all of these are three-row SUVs, you know, go for the top trim of the Telluride, and it'll be, you know, $20,000 less than the Aviator, and, you know, you're getting just as good a car. So it's really, you know, the Telluride and the Palisade are really just two great SUVs to look at.
David on Facebook says, are those annoyingly blinding blue-toned headlamps here to stay? Any chance they'll be outlawed? Anyone else annoyed by them? John, do they annoy you?
Everything annoys me. Yeah. Well,
blinding blue-toned headlamps.
Yeah. Well, there's a couple different things. A lot of cars today use something called HID headlights, high-intensity discharge headlights, sometimes called xenon headlights. When they first fire up, they turn bluish for a minute and then turn very bright white. They're very controlled. They do a really good job. They make road markings kind of pop out. They're brighter. They are designed for, honestly, they're designed for older drivers because the time between the time we're 20 and 60 years old, we need three times as much light to see. So having more light on the road is better. What happens is there's many aftermarket product companies that make replacement bulbs that have a blue tinge to them, and they're supposed to replicate what these HID lights are supposed to be. So when you see a 10-year-old Honda Civic with these bright bluish-white headlights, chances are they're aftermarket bulbs. Chances are they're probably illegal. If you go to a website and look up headlight bulbs, you'll see some that say, you know, original equipment replacement. Then you get to some that say off-road use only. People are buying those and they're putting them in their cars. The next big development with headlights is an advanced headlight that is being used currently right now in Europe. It doesn't meet the laws in the United States because we're kind of slow at adopting new things. And those lights will be so much better. They'll be brighter, but they'll be very controllable. So if you're driving down the road and an oncoming car comes, it'll just shut off a portion of the light, won't blind the oncoming driver, and you'll still have a great view of the road. A lot of problems today, if you look at headlight studies, most cars, most new cars today, if you're driving above 45 miles an hour and you have your low beams on, you're actually out driving where you can see. So good headlights are important. The blue ones, yeah, they should be. Yeah, people should get tickets for those.
We'll go to Eric, who's calling from South Casco. Hi, Eric. Go ahead.
Yes. I just wanted to correct something about the Prius all-wheel drive, electric all-wheel drive. They were new for 2019. I know because I've got one in my driveway. I own one, not 2020.
Okay. Well, tell me about your car. How do you like it?
I like it very much. I love being able to generate power as I go down hills and come to stops. And I try as hard as I can to run on electric power, on battery power, but as long as I can on a flat area, which you can go for a ways. And there's another issue generally about hybrids, which can seem to be a problem. It isn't in my car. But my neighbor has a Ford C-Max plug-in hybrid, and she says she hates it because she doesn't get enough heat in the winter. And I found with mine that I get plenty of heat. I get as much as I did with my old gas engine car.
So maybe, John, it's not the hybrid, it's the car.
Yeah, it could be there's something actually an issue with the car because pure electric cars either use heat from the electric motor source or resistance heating, sort of like what electric heaters have, to produce heat in the car. Hybrid cars, well, yeah, the engines still get hot, and that's why if you're sitting in traffic with a hybrid and it's a cold winter day, the engine, even if you're stuck in traffic, the engine will come on periodically. It's coming on periodically to heat up the coolant, so you do get decent heat. The C-Max, she may have a problem with it. It could just be a heater issue that she needs to have looked at. But I've driven just about every hybrid in every configuration in the wintertime, and I've never complained that there wasn't enough heat.
All right, Eric, thanks for your call. We have an email from Greg. Much is made of the safety of today's mega vehicles. It can be argued, however, that a much greater hazard to safety and health is global warming, and most vehicles, aside from hybrids and electric, are horrible, offering a meager 15 to 20 miles per gallon. Those are equivalent to 1970 and 1980 numbers. Even a major consumer magazine seems to regard this as respectable and then goes on to wax poetic about interior finish, acceleration, and the ability to connect to 10 Bluetooth-enabled devices at one time. When will reviewers come out and say that these bloated vehicles are stupidly oversized and overpowered for most people? Jamie, you're a reviewer. Go for it.
Yeah, I mean, we say that all the time. If you're talking about something like, for example, I think a great example of a kind of a bloated vehicle is, you know, the Cadillac Escalade. And it's, you know, related vehicles like the Ford Expedition or the Chevy, the Chevy Suburban. Like, the reviewers will often say, if you need this type of vehicle, this is a good one. And the key thing is there, if you need to tow and you need to carry a lot of people. If you just need to carry a lot of people, then you can go down to, you know, a midsize SUV, which get, you know, some fairly decent fuel economy ratings, some of which go above 20 mpg. But ultimately, you know, this isn't necessarily, you know, so the reviewers point this out, but it's up to the consumer to buy the car that makes the most sense, not only for themselves, but also for the rest of us. So if you're the kind of person who maybe is towing a travel trailer, maybe twice per year, that doesn't mean that you should buy a Ford Expedition to commute in just because you have that trailer. Or if you take, you know, your whole extended family down to the lake, you know, once a year, you should not buy the biggest vehicle that you need and drive it every day, because you can drive, you know, 51 weeks out of the year, go ahead, drive your hybrid, and then rent something that's bigger for when you actually need it. But ultimately, you know, automakers are making these big vehicles because consumers are buying them. Gas prices prices are still cheap. Interest rates are relatively low. People are able to finance these big expensive cars for a long time. And until people start feeling it in their pocketbooks, they're going to continue to purchase these vehicles. So it's really up to consumers to drive the conversation and say, hey, you know what? We want something smaller. And I'd say the good news is a lot of analysts are starting to see that as, you know, Generation Z, the group that's coming up behind the millennials, they are favoring smaller, more efficient cars. So we should see a shift here as kind of the overall marketplace ages out of car buying, and we'll see a trend, I think, towards smaller vehicles. But for now, it's really up to the consumers to vote with their wallets to bring the cars that they want onto the roads.
Yeah, and the other part of it is people look at fuel economy, but they also have to look at vehicle emissions. And I remember I did a kind of a comparison when the Ford Mustang came out, I don't know, in 19, you know, it might have been the 2000 Ford Mustang came out, and I compared it to the 1965 Mustang, and you could literally have 50 new Mustangs sitting there idling, and it would produce less vehicle emissions than that 1965 Mustang. And that's still the same thing. If you look at the fuel economy of a car today that's getting 15 or 20 miles per gallon, but look at what's coming out of the tailpipe, it's so much less than it was in the 70s and even in the early 80s. So it's kind of a balance. And like Jamie pointed out, people buy what people buy. They buy what they want.
We're almost out of time, John, but I want to ask you this email because I think a lot of people have this question. Is hydrogen as a fuel source for autos no longer a consideration?
No, it still is. In California, where there's probably the biggest hydrogen economy going on, they're still looking at it. Vehicle manufacturers are still working on hydrogen. I was at a General Motors plant and a Ford plant a couple of years ago. They're still working on hydrogen. It is a clean, super clean fuel that provides electric power. It has to be cost effective to make. That's the problem. When they make a gallon of gasoline that sells for $2.50, it probably really costs about 25 cents to make the equivalent gallon of hydrogen that sells for $2.50. Probably costs $2.20 to make it. So it has to become fuel efficient or economy-wise, it has to be a good economy for gas but every gasoline manufacturer is looking into making hydrogen. So
and in the last few seconds, Jamie, we have a call and an email wanting us to mention the electric pickup truck company Atlis, A-T-L-I-S.
Yes, I'm sorry if I left that one off the list, but that just goes to show you're looking for an electric pickup truck, you can look beyond Tesla. They're not your only option.
All right. Well, as always, thank you both. So interesting. We could go on and on and on. Jamie Page Deaton, you just heard there, the automotive editor for U.S. News and World Report. John Paul, spokesperson for AAA Northeast and a master mechanic. Nikki Shields ran the board today. You can find past editions of Maine Calling, as well as helpful links and resources at mainecalling.org. Today's program will be broadcast again tonight at 8. Maine Calling is produced by Jonathan Smith and Cindy Hahn. I'm Jennifer Rooks, and you've been listening to Maine Calling on Maine Public Radio.